It is 16 March. It's Wednesday. I'm Charlie Garrett, and this is the CG Midweek Prophecy Report. A humongous fiscal cliff. That and a lot of other things to go over on today's report. Okay, from the Epoch Times, Barack Obama says he tested positive for COVID-19. And then he went out and told people to get their vaccines. He's got two plus a booster. Not a smart person. Epoch Times, conservative ex-top prosecutor elected South Korean president. I brought that up last week. What would happen? The conservative side won. Good news for South Korea. From the Times of Israel, Bennett's attempts at neutrality on Russia-Ukraine spell trouble for Israel on Iran. Does nobody in the prime minister's office recognize the irony and the danger? Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has decided to try to help mediate a deal between the invading nuclear would-be reviving empire of Russia and its besieged, defiant neighbor Ukraine, a country that Russian President Vladimir Putin has declared has no right to exist and that he is now trying to quash. At the very same time, Bennett and the Israeli leadership are imploring the international community not to finalize a deal with regional heavyweight Iran, which is seeking nuclear weapons, says Israel has no right to exist, and wants to quash us. While the U.S.-led free world attempts to thwart Russia without sparking World War III, Bennett has resolutely refused to take sides. Declining the U.S. invitation to co-sponsor a U.N. Security Council resolution to condemn Russia last month, staying out of the international sanctions effort, and not even declaring a determination to ensure Israel is not abused by Russia and Russians seeking to circumvent the sanctions. Yes, Israel backed the subsequent non-binding U.N. General Assembly resolution condemning Russia, but so did almost the entire rest of the world, with only North Korea, Syria, Belarus, Eritrea opposed. Yes, Foreign Minister Yair Lapid has directly condemned Russia, but Bennett is the voice that counts the most. And yes, Israel is providing considerable humanitarian aid to Ukraine and may be able to open a field hospital there, but it has even managed to make a resonant hash of its refugee policy. Until Tuesday, it was demanding that arrivals who do not have citizenship eligibility under the law of return provide a $3,000 security deposit, a measure introduced by Interior Minister Shaked and only canceled amid mounting outrage. Shaked has now also imposed a $25,000 cap on the number of non-citizenship eligible Ukrainians we will temporarily take in, since some 20,000 of them were here before the war began, and another 3,000 have arrived since, that is hardly generous. It's also quite the symbolic contrast to 1977, when Menachem Begin, in one of his first acts as prime minister, ensured Israel was one of the first nations to provide refuge and asylum to Vietnamese boat people, seeming to belie even the prime minister's self-declared unique status as an honest broker. Bennett's office briefed a handful of journalists on Tuesday night that while it was not for Israel to tell Ukraine's Jewish president whether to cave to Putin's denazification demands, including ceding part of the country and agreeing to stay out of NATO, or fight on for the survival of Ukraine's full sovereignty at terrible cost, Volodymyr Zelensky does not need to know that Ukraine now faces what amounts to a critical choice: capitulation or calamity. American officials have said much the same thing, but the U.S. administration, while it is not providing Ukraine with all the military support Zelensky would want and is not risking American lives in the Ukraine, is emphatically siding with the Ukraine and is leading the effort to thwart Russia via mounting sanctions and economic pressure. Bennett has reportedly decided that Israel is not going to be the Chamberlain of 1938. Well, that's precisely the concern. The parallel is not exact, but it certainly highlights the monumental folly of appeasing a megalomaniacal bully and the disastrous consequence of playing a prime role in that process. According to one unconfirmed report, Israel this week even sent a stiff message to the Ukrainians, declaring itself unwilling to tolerate a situation in which, as it attempts to mediate a solution to the crisis, it is criticized and attacked by Ukrainian officials. This was an apparent reference to Zelensky's declaration last week, days after he asked Bennett to try to help broker an end to the war, that he doesn't feel the Israeli prime minister is wrapped in our flag, and to a since-retracted false allegation by Ukraine foreign minister that Israel's national airline, El Al, was taking blood-soaked money by enabling the use of a Russian payment system. If Bennett, who broke Shabbat to fly to the Kremlin and meet Putin on Saturday in the cause of what he reasonably considered was a potentially life-saving mission, can somehow help extract an agreement that ends the loss of life while ensuring the Ukrainian government and the Ukrainian people retain their sovereignty, their independence, and their territorial integrity, as U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken put it in his meeting with Lapid in Riga on Monday, then his diplomatic efforts will have been more than worthwhile. But if Putin were to prepare to agree to such an outcome, he would not have invaded in the first place. And the difficulties he is having in taking control of the unified and resilient Ukraine are prompting him to ratchet up his aggression, including by despicably targeting civilians rather than moderate his demands. Israel does have a fairly unique status as a warm ally to both sides of this conflict, but Israel has no unique leverage over Putin, no pressure points that it and it alone can bring to bear. Quite the opposite. Putin has leverage over Bennett, who seeks to maintain Israel's freedom of action in the skies over Syria, and who is concerned for the safety of Israelis and Jews in Russia and Ukraine. Bennett thus risks lending legitimacy to Putin while harming Israel's status and interest in the eyes of its free world allies. He seems to be placing Israel not firmly in the camp of the free world, the Ukraine-supporting world, the sanctions-backing world, in the standoff against a rapacious, mass-murdering autocrat, but somewhere troublingly, uniquely in between. Quite apart from the moral intolerability of this position and the dangerous daylight it places between Israel and its core allies, most especially in the United States, this undermines Israel's own vital need that the international community, standing together with Ukraine in resisting a warmongering regional power's devastating agenda, here it is, will do precisely the same for Israel when it comes to Iran. And that is exactly what's going on right now. Bennett is putting Israel into a position that is not good. And when Ezekiel 38:13 comes to fruition, he will only have himself to blame if it happens during our time, because he's saying, well, we're not going to help these people and we're not going to do this people. It doesn't matter which side of the conflict you're on in this. He's taking a middle road. He's not really trying to help or hurt anybody. He's just kind of waffling in his decisions here. And because of that, the same thing is going to happen if Russia and Gog and Magog, you know, the alliance comes down against Israel. The nations surrounding Israel are going to do exactly the same thing. They're going to have a hands-off approach, and they're going to say, we don't want to get involved in this. Israel wasn't willing to make a stand when we wanted him to, and now we're not going to make a stand when Israel needs it. That sounds about reasonable to me. From Zero Hedge, Israeli Prime Minister Bennett pushed Zelensky to surrender to Russia, says a Ukraine official. Okay, once again, whether you agree with the conflict or not, why on earth would a nation that's at war suddenly surrender when they're not losing, they're not winning, they're just in the state of battle right now, and he wants them to surrender? Now, some people have said that he didn't say that, but other people have said that he did say that. And so whatever the situation, if he told Zelensky to surrender to Russia, why would he get involved in that type of a thing? Has somebody asked Israel to surrender to their enemies when they attack them? Absolutely not. There's a war going on. That's not the kind of help you want to give somebody. It actually favors Russia when he should not be doing that if he's taking a middle position. Whatever. The entire thing is just bad. Bennett is not, so far, an effective leader. Then he's not proving himself an effective leader at all at this time. Not saying that Netanyahu would have done any better, but I do not believe that Bennett is doing a good job for Israel at this point. From the Epic Times, effort to repeal California's Proposition 47 fails in committee on partisan vote. Okay, when you vote in lefty politicians, you can expect lefty decisions. And when you have lefty decisions, you can expect your society to come apart. Now, I feel bad for the conservatives in California that have to live through this nonsense, but they are in a state that is run by lefties. And the problem is that the rich lefties are all bailing out. Even if they keep property in California, they're going to come to places like Florida and Arizona and wherever else, and they're going to vote lefty, and they're going to do the same thing here. You'll never get a different result when you decide to vote left. It'll never happen. You'll always get the same stupid results coming out. As smash and grabs are reportedly up across California, they're not just up, they are everywhere. The effort by lawmakers to make crime illegal again by repealing the controversial Proposition 47 failed on March 8th. The party line vote by the California Public Safety Committee, made up of 7 assembly members with 5 Democrats and 2 Republicans. Voters favor ending Proposition 47 by a margin of 2-1, Kylie wrote in a tweet following the hearing. Today, the Public Safety Committee chose to keep it by a vote of 5-2. Our government is beyond broken. Proposition 47, which was passed by voters in 2014, downgraded some crimes, such as simple drug possession, from felonies to misdemeanors. And here it is, raised the minimum amount of stolen goods from $400 to $950 for property theft to be prosecuted as a felony. So people just walk into stores now. Nobody will stop them. No security guards will stop them. They come in, they grab $950 worth of stuff, and they walk out the door. And it happens day in and day out all over California because they pass a stupid law. Part of the problem is that retailers avoid confrontation with shoplifters or don't even file police reports because they know that nothing is likely to happen if they do. This has created a total breakdown in the law, a system where criminals feel wholly free to act outside of the law without fear of legal consequences. And actually, they're not acting outside of the law at all. They're acting within the parameters of the law that the liberals have passed. This is what you get when you vote for liberal people. You get bad policies. You get brain dead people in the government that only want to take from people that earn and give it to people that are not willing to earn. From USSA News, Tucker Carlson says Biden is backing Ukraine to push green energy. In a broadcast, Tucker Carlson accused brain-dead Biden of wage war on the middle class by cutting off purchases of Russian oil, arguing that this would not influence Vladimir Putin and would only harm American consumers. Well, I know that's correct because this morning I read an article that India is willing to buy the Russian oil that we stopped buying. So it's not going to affect him in that area at all. Carlson also claimed that Biden was using this invasion to promote his green energy policies. Biden announced that the U.S. will cease buying Russian oil, which currently accounts for 670,000 barrels per day. As of now, Canada is the largest oil supplier to the United States, but it cannot make up the difference on its own. Biden's admin has instead contracted Venezuela and Saudi Arabia to persuade them to increase production and lower the price of oil, which is currently at a 14-year high. Biden, Carlson said, is using the situation to highlight his green energy policies. Because Putin invaded Ukraine, effectively encouraged by the Biden admin to do that, which is true, because that happened, we are going to send billions of dollars to the Saudi theocracy, and then to the Iranians, and then to Nicolas Maduro in Venezuela, and at the same time, we're going to embrace green energy, which means giving the government of communist China complete control over a power grid here in America. That's our plan. Are you confused by it? Don't be. It's a moral victory. Let us know when you get tired of winning. Carlson is repeatedly asked why Biden supports Ukraine and its fight against Russia, saying that the White House is harming ordinary Americans by punishing Putin. Why exactly are we doing this? What's the point? Is the point to bankrupt Vladimir Putin? That might be worth doing, but this won't do it, Carlson added. Putin already has ready markets around the world for his oil, starting in China, in India, in Turkey, so that's not going to work. Maybe the point is to force Russian troops to withdraw from Ukraine. That would definitely be worth doing, but no, that's not the point either. Braindead Biden will typically say absolutely anything, but even he didn't claim today that sanctioning Russian oil will end the war in the Ukraine, because it won't. So, who exactly are these sanctions aimed at? Think about it. If you want to identify the target of a penalty, consider who's going to suffer from it most. And in this case, the answer could not be clearer. It is middle Americans. They're the ones who are crushed for 2 years under COVID restrictions. They're the ones who are about to be pummeled by shutting down more energy sources. Notice a theme here? The people in charge hate the middle class above all. So it's not Vladimir Putin who's getting punished, it's American citizens. It's you. It's not speculation. The first day Biden entered office, he signed an executive order stopping the construction of Keystone XL, which would have carried oil from Canada across the U.S. and down to the Gulf of Mexico. In addition, he has strongly promoted renewable energy. Carlson claimed Biden was holding back domestic energy production, despite Biden saying that his admin had produced more oil in his first year than Trump did. Just days before Russia invaded Ukraine, weirdly, Biden's admin shut down all new energy leases and permits on federal land. That happened. Vladimir Putin did not do that. Braindead Biden did it. From Zero Hedge, 10 signs the war in Ukraine is part of the Great Reset. This is a very long article, okay? I just saw it this morning. I'm not going to read you the whole thing. I'm not even going to read you all 10 points. I'm just going to read you the first three, because number three confirms what Carlson just said. Okay, Zero Hedge, if you want to read the whole article, go read it. 10 signs the war in Ukraine is part of the Great Reset. This is from winteroak.org UK, and Zero Hedge is citing it. 1. The war between Russia and Ukraine is already causing unprecedented disruption to global supply chains, exacerbating fuel shortages, and inducing chronic levels of inflation. 2. The war's economic fallout will lead to a dramatic downsizing of the global workforce. And 3, here it is, the war has significantly reduced Europe's reliance on the Russian energy sector and reinforced the centrality of the UN Sustainable Development Goals and net zero emissions, which lies at the heart of the Great Reset. Exactly what Biden is doing here. From Newsmax. Pro-Putin NGO, this is a pro-Putin NGO, pushed Green New Deal, protested Keystone XL pipeline. So it's sounding like Tucker Carlson could be right on his analysis. Biden's continued dismissal of domestic energy sources during his first year in office likely played right into the hands of Russian President Putin, who has allegedly been providing covert active support to green energy activist groups around the globe for years in a bid to keep the U.S. and, more importantly, Europe addicted to Russian gas. Former NATO Secretary General Anders Fogh Rasmussen warned in 2014 that Putin was funding certain green groups through far-left organizations as a part of the Kremlin's sophisticated information and disinformation operations. From Fox News, Europe's green energy policies strengthened Putin, Michael Schellenberg says. Europe's green energy policies empowered President Putin and stripped Western countries of their ability to sanction Moscow effectively, according to the best-selling author of Apocalypse Never. You're not really an independent nation if you depend on foreign countries so heavily for your energy supplies. He said European nations have become increasingly dependent on Russia for energy in recent years as they have adopted green policy initiatives. The continent imports nearly 40% of its gas from Russia. It consumes nearly 5 times as much oil as it produces, and Russia produces nearly 4 times as much oil as it consumes. Europe's dependency on Russian energy limits its ability to take actions such as imposing economic sanctions against Russia in response to the conflict in Ukraine. 15 years ago, Europe produced more natural gas than Russia did. Today, Russia exports 3 times more natural gas to Europe than Europe produces. That's due both to the fact that Russia increased its natural gas production and Europe reduced it. Breitbart, GOP Democrat spending bill funds border security for 8 foreign countries. They did this last year under Biden. We're doing it again this year, and we're not building our own wall. A Democrat spending bill negotiated with Republicans uses American taxpayer money to fund border security measures in 8 foreign countries while including no new funds to construct a border wall along the U.S.-Mexico border. The government funding package spends about $370 million in taxpayer money to fund enhanced border security in Jordan, Lebanon, Egypt, Tunisia, and Oman. At least $150 million of that funding is allocated for Jordan's borders. Likewise, the package includes taxpayer money to fund border security in Libya, border security activities in Nepal, and border security programs in Pakistan, but not a nickel to secure our border. Zero Hedge, a recession unlike any other. The U.S. economy is already deteriorating due to humongous fiscal and monetary cliffs. These cliffs are now being compounded by the war in Eastern Europe and near record high inflation. And the Fed's put is much lower and smaller in size than Wall Street believes. The war in Ukraine will exacerbate the negative supply shocks that are already in place due to COVID-19. Worsening bottlenecks will combine with rising inflation to produce a contraction in global growth. Russia produces 12% of the world's oil supply and exports 18% of the world's wheat consumption. Ukraine accounts for 25% of global wheat production. Sanctions and war will serve to slow the economy further and send prices for these vital commodities even higher. But the upcoming recession will be extraordinarily unique. Not only will it occur while inflation is at a multi-decade high, it will be the first U.S. economic contraction to take place while the Federal Reserve has its target interest rate at or near 0%. The following historical data indicates the level of the Fed funds rate just prior to the outset of all 10 U.S. recessions since World War II. Here they are. 1957, 3.5%. 1960, 4%. 1969, 10.5%. 1973, 13%. 1979, 16.1%. 1981, 20.61%. 1989, 10.71%. 2000, 6.8%. 2007, 5.31%, and 2019, 2.45%. In addition, the swoon in GDP will occur after the Fed has just finished printing $4.5 trillion over the past 2 years, and with the national debt vaulting over $30 trillion due to the massive increase in government deficits in the wake of the COVID-19 pandemic. Such borrowing helped send the government's debt-to-GDP ratio soaring to 125%. For perspective, that ratio was just 53% back in 1960, and only 58% as recently as the year 2000. Inflation is destroying real wages, and rising borrowing costs are destroying consumers' ability to consume. Consumption is 70% of GDP, and that means the rate of economic growth is set to plunge. This would normally spur the government into remedial action, but the fact remains that the ability of the Treasury and Federal Reserve to turn around a recession expeditiously by borrowing trillions of dollars and having that debt monetized by the Fed has become greatly fettered this time around. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell is in a conundrum that is mostly of his own making and from which there is no innocuous outcome. If the Fed gets overly concerned about slowing GDP due to the conflict in Ukraine, it could, for the most part, shelve its plans to raise rates and the planned reduction in the size of its balance sheet. But that would risk propelling inflation even further away from Powell's stated 2% target, which he has exceeded by 3.75 times. Inflation expectations could then rise intractably from there. In other words, doing nothing is not a viable option for Powell. Not with inflation running at a 40-year high and with the WTI oil price vaulting above $110 per barrel. Well, it did come down a little bit in the past couple days. It's about $100 a barrel right now. Commodities are indeed soaring, but the inflation doesn't end there. Rents have soared by over 20% year over year, which is closer to the actual rate of inflation rather than the massaged 7.5% of CPI reported by the Labor Department. If inflation were to continue to increase even close to that rate, it would push those in the middle class into the lower class, and those in the lower class into poverty. Of course, this would end up destroying markets and the economy anyway. It could also put at risk confidence in the U.S. dollar and sovereign bond market. Therefore, the Fed is now forced to combat inflation whether it really wants to or not. At the nucleus of the inflation issue is runaway owners' equivalent rent costs, which are at 30%, make up the greatest weighting in the CPI metric. But to tackle owners' equivalent rent inflation, Powell must first pop the record-setting real estate bubble. The negative ramifications of accomplishing this task for the banking system and economy will be enormous. Nevertheless, if Powell prosecutes his plan to raise rates six or more times this year, just as the Fed destroys the money supply by shedding $1 trillion in treasuries and mortgage-backed by securities, the upcoming recession could quickly morph into a depression. So which is it, Powell? Keep monetary policy loose and risk an intractable rise in inflation and the complete loss of confidence and credibility of the central bank, or tighten monetary policy enough to deflate the massive bubbles in bonds, real estate, and equities? Either strategy is now destined to end in disaster for the market and the economy. Such are the consequences derived from the Fed counterfeiting trillions of dollars for the purpose of distorting and obliterating free markets. The bottom line is this. The view of Pento portfolio strategy is that the Fed will now be forced to tighten monetary policy into one of the greatest decelerations of economic growth and earnings ever. We'll see what happens, but they've got nowhere to go with almost zero interest rates. What are they going to do? I would guess, I don't know if I agree with the Pento portfolio, but I would guess personally that it would be the popping of the housing market bubble. It'll cause a lot of trouble, but that would be my guess. And the reason why is because when that happens, all the people that have got mortgages out there that have been paying these exorbitant prices and lose their houses, the banks just reacquire the houses. So the property value goes down for a while. They still have the property. And so that would be my guess what would happen, but I don't know. We can't know one way or another what these people are going to do. Whatever it is, it will be the wrong thing, and the economy is going to suffer because of it. The world economy at that. From Gateway Pundit, Naomi Wolf confirms Big Pharma was adding varying amounts of active ingredient to batches of COVID vaccine. Former Clinton advisor and COVID vaccine critic Naomi Wolf joined Steve Bannon on The War Room. Naomi shared her latest bombshell from her investigation into the Pfizer vaccine documents released by the U.S. government on their COVID vaccine testing. Naomi's team of investigators, doctors, and attorneys identified several U.S. government documents that confirm that Pfizer was adding varying amounts of active ingredient to their experimental COVID vaccines. According to the data, the range of dangerous active ingredient went from 3 mg to 10 mg to 30 mg to 100 mg. Now, mg, I don't know what that means. It's one of those Greek symbols, and so I might be saying mg wrong, okay? But you can see from 3 to 100, they've got varying degrees, depending on the batch they happen to inject you with. This ties in directly with the website, How Bad Is My Batch?, that was created so you could track how many adverse reaction incidents were linked to the vaccine batch that you were given. Now there is proof via AMA documents that they are distributing different doses of the active ingredient in the COVID vaccines based on batch number. Okay, how can you say that we have a vaccine that is 98% effective when you have given different people different vaccine doses or active ingredient doses? In other words, I believe, this is just me guessing and I could be completely wrong, but by saying that this is our vaccine and we're giving it to the American public or to the people of the world in general, and it is safe and it's 98% effective, and yet they've changed the active ingredient doses, that would be criminal fraud. That would be criminal fraud. Now, I could be wrong in that, but I am supposing that that is the case. How can you say that this is the vaccine that we're approving for emergency authorization use and then change the ingredients of the vaccine and say it's the same vaccine that they approved? I don't get that. I think it would be fraud, and I'd love to see lots and lots of people join Dr. Fauci as they all go off to prison. From the Epic Times, I've never seen morale so low. USAF Lieutenant Colonel on military life under vaccine mandates. In an interview, USAF Lieutenant Colonel Adam Conrad said that morale for both military personnel and contractors has been hard hit by Biden's vaccine mandates, which require that everyone employed by the federal government get vaccinated or lose their job. Conrad painted a grim picture of the state of USAF personnel who have faced persistent fears of losing their jobs if they object to being forced to take the relatively untested CCP vaccine. I have never seen morale so low, said Conrad, who asked that his name be changed to protect his identity. Conrad, like many service members across the military, faces the risk of losing his job if he does not accept the CCP virus vaccine. Though he has submitted an exemption request, Conrad is not optimistic that the request will be granted, despite his relatively high rank in the service. Most service members who have sought such an exemption from the vaccine, though ruled to have sincere belief against it by military chaplains, have had their request denied. Based on reports received from those around him who have taken the vaccines, Conrad argued that adverse effects from the novel vaccine likely posed more risk to him than does the virus. The ends couldn't justify the means by any stretch. To qualify for an exemption request, service members must first be evaluated by military chaplains. The military chaplain corps is trained to accommodate all religious beliefs. During their evaluation, service members discuss their beliefs with the chaplain. In this case, explaining why they hold serious moral qualms against the CCP virus vaccine. If the chaplain is satisfied, he can send in his recommendation that a request be accepted. Aside from religious or moral objections, Conrad explained that the USAF considers four key factors in deciding whether to grant an exemption: military readiness, unit cohesion, good order and discipline, and public health and safety. In other words, he explained, fulfilling a request should have no adverse effect on accomplishing the mission. The effects that mandates have had on morale have been pronounced, according to Conrad. I've never seen morale so low, and it's not among the unvaccinated. Conrad said that many of the airmen who submitted to the vaccine have faced significant adverse effects. Recently, as the Biden admin has pushed more and more for booster shots, service members are nervous that they'll be forced to accept another vaccine, even though the Pentagon has said that boosters will not be required. The issue remains a concern for many service members. This concern, Conrad said, has dropped morale even lower. There's been a lot of angst about whether they're going to require the booster, he said. In general, Conrad ruled morale is not good. Conrad reported that those seeking religious or moral exemptions have faced scrutiny and ostracism from others in the service. An attorney said, "My clients fear this is an attempt to purge conservative evangelicals and Orthodox Catholics from the military because of their religious beliefs. Even prior to the official mandate, my clients have faced the threat of criminal prosecution and have been repeatedly berated by their leadership. I have clients who are not allowed to take holiday leave to see their families, attend church services, forced to work from a car in a parking lot, and even restricted to base or to a ship because they were not vaccinated." This is how you treat the U.S. military when you're the Biden administration. What a disgrace. Epic Times. Senator seeks information on spike in disease rates in military database. This is something we talked about a month or two ago. He is now getting close to a deadline that he has set. Senator Ron Johnson asked Unisant, the company that merges the military's defense medical epidemiology database, for details on how the firm runs the system. According to the database, there were spikes in various diseases during the COVID-19 pandemic. The military has acknowledged the figures, but alleges the rise in diagnoses actually stems from an underreporting of data in previous years. The military has taken DMED offline to identify and correct the root cause of data corruption. Johnson was told shortly after the military created and preserved a full backup of the DMED in response to a preservation request, but the military has largely failed to provide adequate responses to three letters sent to DOD officials, the senator said. Because of the lack of transparency, Johnson has turned to Unisant. The senator asked whether Unisant was aware of the alleged issue with DMED. If so, what are those issues? When were those issues uncovered? Who uncovered those issues? And to what extent did Unisant communicate those issues to DOD? The missive says, before asking for a list of all instances where issues were found in the DMED and all communications between Unisant and the DOD referring to or relating to the DMED from August 1st of 2021 to the present. Johnson wants the information and records by, here it is, March 21st. Unisant and the Department of Defense did not respond to requests for comment. Johnson previously wrote to Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin, who is a communist traitor, okay, noting that figures from the whistleblowers communicated to Thomas Rentz, an attorney representing them, indicated a 2,181% spike in hypertension, a 551% increase of Guillain-Barré syndrome, and a 472% spike in female infertility for 2021. When compared to the five-year average from 2016 to 2020. Johnson raised concerns that DMED was taken offline after he asked for all records referring to, relating to, or reported to DMED preserved. Let me be clear. Any attempt to alter data contained within DMED without preserving all records before and after these changes are made to the database will completely undermine my preservation request and will be considered an active effort to mislead Congress. Now, that's important because we've got an election coming up, and it could be, we'll hope, that the House and Senate will go to the Republicans. And if that's so, these people could be in a bunch of trouble if, in fact, they manipulate this database. We'll see where this goes. 21 marches coming soon to a March day near you. From Mail Online, Asian man is clubbed over the head with a hammer after accidentally bumping into another man on a subway platform. Male suspect is described as wearing a red leather jacket, wig, and purple lipstick. What's missing from that description? I'll read it again. This is how they identify him. He's wearing a red leather jacket, wig, and purple lipstick. Oh, and they also identify him as a male. Something is missing from the description. Gateway Pundit, Joe Biden's America. NBC tells Americans to drive slower to save gas. That sounds like Jimmy Carter days, doesn't it? Remember, we had to go down to 55 miles an hour all over the whole country, and it took like 16 years to get from your home to the next state to say hi to your grandma? Gateway Pundit, in 2018, Senate Democrats demanded that Trump do something about high gas prices of $3 a gallon in liberal states. So the liberal states had these high gas prices. They blame Trump and they demand that he do something about it. Now it's at like, what, $4.50. I just filled up a day ago, $4.27 or something. And it's okay. Biden's not doing anything wrong. It's all Russia's fault. Such is the world in which we live. And so from Sarasota, Florida to Ulaanbaatar, Mongolia, I'm Charlie Garrett, and that is your midweek CG report.